It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. On this opening day of turkey season, so let me tell you, we're speaking to you from the past.
For us adults,
that's
opening
right.
Day.
Yes. The children were last weekend. We're going to talk about that real quickly. Majority of the show today, we're talking fishing. And we're going to talk.
Why, Sean? Why are we talking fishing?
Because you and I are turkey hunting right now. coming up.
You're right about that.
Captain Eric Nelson's going to join us. We got stuff to talk about, a tournament coming up, and we'll talk some inshore fishing with him. Speaking of inshore fishing and proposed changes, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joins us in the next segment. We talked to him earlier in the week. We'll run through that coming up. A big discussion about proposed changes for flounder and speckled trout. You do not want to miss this.
No.
All the rumor mill going on out there. We went straight to the stable, looked the horse in the mouth, and got it from there. So
yes.
Horse's mouth coming up. Scott, I'm sorry. I didn't mean your horse. But Director Bannon coming up here in just a little bit. But before we do, congratulations to Dylan.
Yeah. Yeah,
boom!
Yeah, opening day. How about that? That's pretty good.
So
that's a good starter.
A real good start.
Yeah.
But what makes me feel sorry for y'all in your hunt, but also makes me feel better because I went and listened on Sunday. Because you, the turkeys that you hunt around are the gobblinest turkeys that this side of the Mississippi.
You're right. Typically,
I mean,
yeah.
Compared to what I got in Western Washington County, where they're born scared to gobble. You've got some gobblers over there, but y'all did not hear gobbling.
Did not hear a turkey gobble all day long Saturday, or we didn't get to go to the middle of the day because it was raining up
on
there
Sunday. Yeah.
Never heard one Sunday afternoon. We hear them gobbling afternoons up there too.
Yeah.
But we never heard a turkey gobble the whole weekend up there, and that's very unusual.
Very,
very unusual. Now, you know, we called in some hens, and there was two gobblers with them, and got to hear, you know, the drumming,
yeah,
all that, and got to see them, but they were just a little too far. It was like 75, 80 yards out there, and the hens kind of came by us, but the gobblers stayed out, and then the hens went away, and the gobblers went with them, and then, you know, we got up and went to another spot and sat there for a little while and called one in, but he never said a word, never drummed, never strutted, never nothing, just come in silent, you know?
Well, on that, if somebody is in that situation where they're not hearing birds gobble, okay, but know when they have birds, like you know you have birds,
yeah.
are you were aggressive with calling, not aggressive with calling, light?
No,
what did you do? Just
no, I wasn't aggressive in calling at all. Maybe every 20 minutes I'd yip a little bit, shut up, and just – you know,
kind of matching the fact that you weren't hearing, you weren't hearing the
turkeys.
I wasn't
hearing a lot of turkeys yipping. I didn't hear anything. Now,
so it would be really out of place.
If you're sitting there and you're hearing a lot of hens everywhere, now I'm going to be everywhere.
Yeah, you jump in the mix, but you weren't hearing.
Yeah, when I'm not hearing nothing or, you know.
It's a good takeaway.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything. I'm just, you know, cluck a little bit and yip a little bit, and that's it. Not a lot, you know, just a little segment.
Yeah, because, I mean, for a lot of folks, it'll be like, well, this is how I always call. You shouldn't have one way you always call.
No.
It just depends on what the turkeys
not.
Are doing. All right. So we're in the turkey woods right now, hopefully having a better weekend for the big kids than the kids had last weekend weather-wise. And we'll report back next week. But rest of the show, we're talking fishing here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joining us next to talk about proposed changes for speckled trout and flounder. And then coming up in the second half, Captain Eric Nelson joins us right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Let's check in with Director of Alabama Marine Resources and talk more about this. Scott Bannon now on with us here at FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Sean. How are you guys today?
We're good. I want to talk about we had a meeting last night. That was a Wednesday night meeting, and this is causing a lot of people to call in, check in with our Facebook page about proposed changes and regulations here for fishing, for speckled trout and flounder here in Alabama.
Yes, flounder and speckled trout are two of our favorite fish to go after here. And so we're looking at some of our stock assessments and spotted sea trout or specks. We have some concern for them, but the flounder are really in bad shape. And we need to make some tough decisions about the management of those fish going forward. And so we've been having meetings with private anglers, commercial fishermen, because flounder has a commercial aspect. And we're going to have meetings with inshore fishing guides all the different user groups that participate in these fisheries, because we have some flexibility in what management tools we use to continue to conserve these fish.
Yeah, okay, just lost you for a second there on the cell. So you have, you said you had a couple different tools to be able to use?
Yes, we have some different management options, like the size limit. We can do slot limit, changing bag limit. So there's some different options on the table.
Okay, so first of all, we'll deal with these separately. First of all, let's start flounder. That's good. We'll start with flounder. The concern is what? Is the science lining up with what we've, you know, anglers have noticed, that finding a flounder is a hard thing to do?
Yes. Anecdotally, you know, from especially private anglers, it has been very tough to find flounder. The guys that gig, they do better, but they're still having some challenges. Our commercial landings are down. Our recreational landings are down. So this is, it's not just us here in Alabama. The whole Gulf Coast is kind of having some challenges with flounder. So we're all trying to decide what is a good path forward on this. But doing nothing is not the answer right now.
Okay, I want to talk about the path forward in a second, but I want to look in that rear view, because you know, I've got you on the show, and I got to ask you, is this any science out there showing that this is the flounder numbers being down a result of the oil spill? Because that's what a lot of people have said. You know, hey, it was post oil spill that we had reduced numbers of flounder.
Well, the numbers really started changing a little bit before then. We have some time series that we look at. I'm not saying that it didn't have some effect. You know, there was naturally some environmental damage due to that. There may be some other environmental factors. And what I've discussed with the public is, if we make some changes and in 3 to 5 years we're not seeing some positive change, it's not necessarily the harvest, then it can be environmental conditions that we're experiencing that are affecting things like oysters, some low oxygen levels, flow patterns are different. The amount of effort for fishing in the inshore industry is tremendous. We have numbers from the 90s to the 2000s that it's 10 times the number. Went from 50,000 trips to 500,000 trips. So there are a lot of people out there enjoying the fisheries in Alabama.
It went from what? From the 90s to now? What was the ratio? What, from what to what?
From around 55,000 trips to 500,000 trips.
Holy cow. Yeah, and I think there's a couple things going on here. I mean, number one, there's a natural progression towards that, just the way people became more interested in inshore fishing. But at the same time, you gotta at least look at the idea with closures on snapper and limiting people for that fishery. Some of that pressure had to move somewhere else.
It is. We call it effort shift. When one fishery is not available, people move their efforts to other fisheries. They like to fish. Fishing is a way of life in South Alabama. And so we do realize there is an impact from that. So the more fisheries that are open and available, people get the opportunities to pick and choose which one they participate in. And now with the boats, that these inshore boats can run offshore, so a lot of people have changed the type of boats they're using. So they are participating in as many fisheries as possible.
But you're saying, so while limits, and there has been change on limits because we're talking flounder here, but yeah, it's you know, you can have limits set, but it's really how many people attempt to go catch that fish. I mean, you could have a limit set at whatever, but if there's only 17 people chasing that critter, then it's not a big deal, or versus, you know, 500 people chasing that critter.
That's correct. And, you know, we don't see the recreational angler getting a bag limit of flounder, which is 10 per person, almost never. That's a rare occurrence, except for guys that use the gig and that are good and that are very knowledgeable about how that fishery works. They have great opportunities, but it's still harder for them.
Okay, so what we're talking about, flounder and proposed changes, what is your thought? What do you want to do with the flounder regulations?
Well, right now, I'm willing to make some pretty tough decisions on flounder, and I think we need to look at an adjustment to the size limit. Recreationally, I don't know if adjusting the bag limit really makes any difference if you're not catching them.
Getting a limit, what does it matter?
What does it matter? And I hear loud and clear from the public that once something is taken away, it is very difficult to give it back, and mm-hmm. That is true. So I have a little bit of reluctance about changing the bag limit, but there is some support from people to do that. And then the other aspect is there is not a trip limit for the commercial fishery. So we're not trying to eliminate jobs or opportunities for people to make money, but I think we need to look really hard at whether we institute a trip limit for that. And we're also talking about a season closure as a possibility for both recreational and commercial anglers for 1 month. The month of November happens to be the month that those fish make their way out into the Gulf and they are spawning. So it's a migration pattern for them. If we can leave them alone for that 1 month, we think there's a huge biological impact on letting those females get out there and spawn.
Okay, you mentioned commercials, so I gotta take this, and I know you're tasked with private anglers and commercial fishermen, over Alabama Marine Resources. So I get that. I get where you're coming from, and I'm going to tell you right now, you know where I come from, the private angler side. The economic impact on, I mean, if we're looking at trying to protect a resource, and that resource is held in the public trust, the economic impact, it has to be higher to me in a recreational than a commercial.
There is some argument for that, and here's what I tell people about economic impact. Is I'm a pro-job and pro-the economy type person, and so all aspects of our fisheries, commercial, recreational, and charter, all have some impact to the economy. So if possible, we want to make decisions that continue to allow all of those people to participate in the fishery and have a positive economic impact.
Okay, so because you got to look at it the whole, right? You have the whole biomass of flounder or speckled trout in this, and how it, well, let's say flounder because there's a commercial aspect, how that's apportioned, right? Who gets to take what? I mean, that's your job.
Yes, and we don't apportion it by user groups like the red snapper industry and some things, or the fishery does. So we just look at it as, what is the fishery? What is the stock assessment showing us? And what are the participants? And what is their take? What are they taking away from the fishery? At the end of the day, it's dead fish. How many dead fish are coming out of the system?
All right. So these meetings, like the one that happened last night, and that's where you're talking about this, hearing back from anglers. What are you hearing?
Well, we see a lot of support, believe it or not, for some bag limit changes, which I have some concerns with, just because it may be tough to give it back to you. But people are very concerned about these two fisheries, so they're supporting some change. And everybody has a different view on which one of the changes is best. We will finish the meetings. We have a Charter for Hire meeting coming up on March the 27th. That's the last segment we haven't had a one-on-one discussion with. And our staff will sit down, we'll look at the options, and I will compile the feedback. And we'll look at what we think gives us the best biological rebound, and what still keeps people participating in the fishery that they feel comfortable with. Nobody's going to be completely happy at the end of the day. We understand that. But we have a lot of people that really understand that there needs to be some change if we're going to continue to fish. And the goal is, as I tell people, my goal is to make fishing better for your children than it is for you. And I think we can head that way.
All right, just joining us, talking to Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, about these discussion of proposed changes for flounder and speckled trout. And Mike Ward has walked in the studio as well.
How you doing, Scott?
Good. How are you, Mike?
Doing good.
Yeah, so we're talking about this idea. Number one, you said, okay, on flounder, I want to finish up flounder, then we'll go to trout. But with flounder, the proposed size change would be to what?
We have a couple of options on the table. Right now we're at a 12-inch minimum length, and we could go to a 13, 14, or 15, and we have some numbers that show what the impact to the fishery is if you move up those numbers. 15 is a big push, but it has a huge impact. 14 would be somewhere in the middle. The bag limit change, again, like I said, doesn't make much difference, but a commercial trip limit and possibly a season closure for both user groups to the fishery, and with a minimal impact to the people that get to participate. It's a 1 month closure.
All right, so that closure in November. Now let's move on to speckled trout, and what issues are facing speckled trout in your opinion, and how do you propose dealing with those?
So with the trout, what we call the spawning potential ratio is down. That means we're not putting enough babies back in the system. So it's not in bad shape. It's just time for us to take a look at it because we have some concerns. So I don't think we need to make as big a change in the speckled trout fishery. Possibly a slot limit has a lot of support from anglers. You let some of those bigger females go, they have a lot more eggs. A big 24-inch trout as opposed to like a 14-inch trout, she has about five times the number of eggs. But if we move that bottom end up, it lets a lot more females stay in the system. And the goal is that if you move the minimum size limit up, that eventually that becomes your new norm, that you're okay. These are now, quote, small trout at 15 inches or 16 inches because you're catching a lot of them that size or bigger. So a lot of support for moving that bottom end up and surprising the support for a slot limit. If we were to do a slot limit, we would allow a trophy fish, let you get a lunker, let you get one to take home to show the neighbors.
You know, Scott, this is something when you joined me a couple weeks ago on the midday show, we talked about, and I think I'm not on everybody's boat, and I know there's some people that don't do this, but among my peer group, we kind of have instituted something very similar, but that's where I get into the lower limit. Like the idea of turning big female trout back, it's something that's been happening on my boat for a long time. Unless somebody's going to mount the fish, let's get a picture of it, let's get her back, because I see her as a egg-laying machine. Also, maybe it's just the size of the skillets at my house that 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-inch trout fillet fits a lot better in there, and that's kind of what we keep for meat. So, I mean, it's the idea of, but you're saying it's important on the bottom end too, because what, just the recruitment of females to get them bigger? Or, I mean,
that's correct. The number of females that you will release at that lower end, if you move the size limit up to like a 15 or 16 inch fish, you leave a lot more fish in the system, with the anticipation that you now will have more fish down the road in the system and you'll get to more bigger fish down the road. And so you keep your bag limit where it is, even though there's been a lot more support than I would have thought for a reduction in the bag limit. But what you've said, we have found that to be true amongst anglers that get to fish a lot, is they kind of have their own rules on their boat about releasing big fish or only keeping a few fish to take home. What is our need today? Those are responsible anglers, and I appreciate hearing from those folks that they're doing that we just like to go catch fish. When we need to eat a few, we take a few. Otherwise, we leave them in the system.
Now, Scott, the only problem that I see and that I've heard from friends of mine is that
You're blessed, Mike. I said, if you only heard of one problem, you're blessed.
Well, it gets into the snapper scenario. You know, yeah, we were happy. It was fine. They dropped it down to 10, and we were fine with that. And then they dropped it down to whatever it was, 8 a person or 7 or whatever, and we was okay with that. And then you get down to where you catch one, and you get no season. And, you know, that's what people are more concerned about. You start dropping it down and doing these things, then you never get it back. I mean, once you drop it, or you have a, you don't get to fish in November, then next year it's going to be, you don't get to fish August, September, October, November. And, you know, it's that kind of stuff that people are concerned about, that once you start doing a little bit, you just keep taking more and more and more and more. And then you get around to where, say, dead gum, we used to be able to go out and catch fish. Now we can't do anything anymore. I mean, that's the concern that I'm hearing about all this.
Sure. It's a turning the pot up slowly, and I want to avoid that. And when I have these meetings with the public, that's why I have had some concerns about reducing the bag limit, because for that very reason, if you take it away, it's harder to use the science to give it back to you. If you're not catching your limit now, let's not worry too much about the bag limit and let those fish get bigger, because moving the bottom end up will allow more fish in the system, and initially you'll reduce the bag limit because you're not catching as many fish, because it's harder to catch that bigger fish. Well, eventually it should get to be where it gets to be more common to catch those fish, and you'll see more people start moving up the number of fish that they're keeping, because there's more fish and bigger fish. So I agree with you. It is difficult to give things back when it's taken away. That's why we want to meet with the public and the different participants in these fisheries, to make sure that we're getting a big picture view. We're hearing from the people that are out there, and we may need to make some very difficult decisions with flounder, more so than trout. We can be more cautious with trout. Flounder, we just have to make some real difficult decisions to continue to participate in that fishery.
Yeah, there's a lot of anecdotes to this, and I want to get to a couple of them. Number one, this idea on trout, after the oil spill, when it opened back up, that year was fantastic. And people say that's because, you know, went for months and months and months with no angling impact and really no net impact either. So that's part of the discussion. But also, and this is just, I am not a scientist, not a marine biologist. I'm interested in that kind of stuff, but I'm a guy that's been in the outdoors my whole life. And I look at those speckled trout this way, and tell me if this lines up, that when you work on the bottom end, and this is why I worry about the bottom end size limit, there's no guarantee when I turn back that 15-inch or 14-inch trout going forward that it's ever going to get to be a 5-pound, 6-pound, 7-pound sow trout that lays a bunch of eggs. There's no guarantee. A lot of things could happen. I mean, the second I release that fish, a dolphin could eat it. It could get eaten by anything else. A ton of things could happen. But once that trout gets big, it's now run that gauntlet. It's gone through that funnel. And now it's shown that it is a resource that produces a bunch more trout. Don't you do a lot more good on the top end than the bottom end, or is that not right?
Well, because our surveys, and again, none of our systems are perfect. That's why we kind of have to look at what the surveys are showing us, what the science says, and then what people are seeing. In our catch surveys, only about 3% of the trout that are being kept are over that 22-inch limit. So, like you said, people aren't putting those bigger ones back in. Mm-hmm. But if you just do the math on the numbers of younger fish, that if you turn that 13, 14, 15-inch fish loose, that they go back in the system, you are right. There's always a predator out there, but it's a numbers game. If you can keep more numbers in there, more numbers will survive. And on the flounder side, we are also working on our flounder program at our Claude Petit Mariculture Center, and our goal that within sometime in the year 2020 that we're going to be putting about 50,000 to 60,000 one-inch flounder back into the system, and that's a potential true stock enhancement. So, again, single-digit survival rate, but any survival rate is better than what we're having now, adding fish into the system. So I do agree with you that those bigger ones have run the gauntlet and have laid a lot of eggs. There is a little bit of argument that we'll take them out and let somebody else have the opportunity, but right. It's all about the numbers.
Yeah, and how long can they do that? That's the part I don't know. You know, when you get a 5-pound trout, which is, I know everybody, they think they catch 5-pound trout all the time. They don't. When you catch real 5-pound on the digital scale and up trout, you're looking at a, not a unicorn, but a rarity, one that's run the gauntlet. And if that fish can live for years and years after, now there's way fewer predators for a fish that size than a 14-inch fish. It seems like it just, I mean, the idea with what I saw with redfish, right, with making the slot limit. And I'd rather we not have to make any changes, but I see, sure. And I know redfish aren't the same as speckled trout, but that sure has been a boon for redfish. Our redfish is better than it's ever been in my lifetime.
I think so. And that's why, again, with trout, it's not critical, so we can make a smaller, not as difficult change, but again, the support is there for a slot limit, and I'm not opposed to that slot limit. I think that turns anglers into very responsible anglers, much to the degree that you said you and your friends and some of the others who participate on a pretty regular basis, they're already doing that.
Well, if we have to make any sacrifice here on speckled trout, like you're talking about, I don't want to reduce the limit, because this is what Mike was talking about as well. I think, you know, the idea that you go and if you're lucky enough to be able to fish every week and a couple times a week, that's right. You can go catch a couple fresh trout and have fresh fillets and not, but a lot of folks, you know, got a whole bunch of things on their list, and maybe they only get to fish speckled trout 3 times a summer, 4 times a summer. I hate it for them, but they get to, and so they're going to want to keep those 10 fish to get those 20 fillets.
That's correct. And that's why, again, I have some reluctance in lowering a bag limit. But we wanted to do what's best for the fishery and what, to a certain extent, what the public wants. And now, that doesn't mean that's the best answer sometimes, but you are right. We do want to give people an opportunity. It costs a lot of money to make a fishing trip of any type. Mm-hmm. So we want to make it the best trip we possibly can. So I think we're going to get to continue to have great trout fishing here in Alabama. I think we're going to get to where we're going to have some bigger fish in the system by making some adjustments. And we're going to make sure that we're not reducing the biomass out there. And again, flounder's a little different story, because I think they're just in trouble, and we have to make some very difficult decisions. But we hope that we give it back. I tell people that triggerfish is one of those that I hope that we get to give some triggerfish back in in the near future because it was we're down to one fish, and that's a struggle.
Yeah, from pictures I saw from my friends, it took a total of about 5.5 minutes for everybody on the boat to catch their big trigger and get done.
See, that's what I'm afraid of, and I think that's what a lot of people
difference
are afraid
is,
of.
This is not federal. I will say this. Yeah. This is in state hands.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's still, they've got such a sour taste in their mouth from the snapper and the grouper and the amberjack and the triggerfish that they are just, they don't want any change. They don't want anything. I mean, they see what can happen. Once you take something away from somebody, you never, ever get it back, it looks like, to most people.
Yeah, and that's correct. And that's why these public meetings have been so important, that at least when people leave the meeting, they've seen what we present and we have this open dialogue, they at least don't look at us as, you're just the government trying to take something from me. Probably the best compliment I've had in all of this is a person said, Scott, you wouldn't come do this if you didn't care, because you could just make the decision. And I said, that is true. But I do care about what the people say, and I care very much about the fishery. And so we want to make the best decisions for the fishery. And they're not always easy, and they're not always going to make everyone happy. But we want to hear what people have to say, and they need to know that we're not government. We're people. We're Kevin and Scott and John and the guys that do the assessment that we want things to be healthy for our fisheries here in Alabama.
Hey, before we wrap up, I just got one more. This is now away from speckled trout and flounder, and a snapper question for you, because our snapper season opening on June 1st, right? Saturday night, right. Or Saturday, 12:01.
Scott June Banner 1st. Says that's Derby Day.
Yes, Derby Day. Get ready.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I remember that.
But I saw, you know, Mississippi released that there, and I've tried to explain on the air during the other shows during the week to folks how that works. They said, how can they start earlier? And I said, that's what, you know, states having the right to allocate days is. But with Mississippi opening a week or so earlier, tell me the rules for, obviously you have to get an out-of-state fishing license, but let's walk through. You and I know each other. So I want to go fishing Memorial Day weekend and fish Mississippi. What do I have to do to be legal as an Alabama resident?
Sure. You go and you purchase a license for Mississippi, a non-resident license, whether it's a trip license or an annual license. And then you register in their Tails and Scales program, and you'll get a number, a hail-out number, to go fishing. Now, you can leave from whichever state, but you need to return to the state of Mississippi and put your boat back on the trailer and land those fish in Mississippi, and then you report back in their system. It's relatively simple. It's very similar to snapper check, and then you trailer those fish back to Alabama. If you've met all those requirements, you're legal. You cannot come into Alabama while we're closed, and that's historically we have not done that. We've done it under the EFP to make sure that people are landing the fish in the state that's open so that they're counted in those states. Mississippi has a check-in, check-out system, similar, you know, snapper check has a check-in system, but some of the other states do not, like Florida. So there's no way to report those fish other than to make yourself available to be surveyed by landing in that state. As we move forward, you know, those rules may change, but right now, if Alabama is closed, you have to land it in the state that's open.
Right, right. So, and I want to get to another part of that question in a second, but if I did what you just said, and using the hail out, hail in number, and I make my report to Mississippi, and you and our buddies, you come over to my house, and my boat's sitting there in the yard at Dolphin Island, and you say, hey, what'd you do today, and check the cooler. As long as I have that report from Mississippi, I'm good with you, right?
That's correct. You can show that you legally participated in that fishery. You're good. And I'm glad you got to go fish.
Okay. Then the other part
of it. And you probably fished off the coast of Alabama.
Well, that's what Yeah, you knew what I was about to ask. So I go, and I don't even want to give that the name of the launch that I will use, the first one in the Mississippi, but it's out there. Y'all can Google it. And so I'll use that launch. I'll run out through Mississippi because I've got to put it back on the trailer there anyway. So I'll run out. And do I get out 9 miles and I can hang a left turn?
Correct. As long as you're outside of 9 miles. Now, you can transit
federal water.
Fish on, you can run out. But as soon as you're outside of 9 miles, you can fish outside of 9 miles in any state, Florida to Texas.
Right. And then if I'm coming back in, do I need to do the old stay 9 miles, beyond 9 miles out till I get to Mississippi, lined up Mississippi, and then turn and come in?
That's correct.
Okay. See, that's good, because that's what a lot of people are wondering. All right, listen, we're going to have to get you back on and talk more about this. Remind folks, if they want to get more information about these meetings or about the Facebook page, where do they go to get more intel?
go to outdooralabama.com and sign up to get our press releases, and we'll send you information all the time, and go to our Alabama Marine Resources Facebook page.
As always, we appreciate your time. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. Love the fishing.
Thank you, Scott.
Big thank you to Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, giving us some heads up to what might be coming. And these discussions, you had one that happened last week, then you'll have more going forward. And it's good. I mean, some people will say, well, they snuck this on us. They really didn't. They, through the Facebook page, through the website Outdoor Alabama, they've made this public. We're trying to make it public as well.
Right.
Director Bannon wants input from the anglers out there. The flounder's one thing. Flounder's kind of an emergency thing.
I don't think that's overfishing personally, Sean.
Right. We've got to find out.
I think there's something else going on. I don't know what it is, but I know they're catching them over in Mississippi, and I know they're catching them over in Florida.
Okay, and that would dispel, the oil spill.
Yes.
Discussion, because I asked him about that earlier in the conversation before you got in the studio, and I said, what about the oil spill? He said, actually, our stats showed declining flounder populations before the oil spill. Now, it could have been a catalyst, but they were already seeing some issues. You know what? We don't have to wonder about this. We have Captain Eric Nelson from Fanatics Charters in with us, and a man that spends more time on the water fishing speckled trout and flounder than you and I could think about in a lifetime.
Oh, yes.
So, let's talk about that. Yeah, so we just got done talking to Director Bannon. What do you think about that? Flounder numbers, have you seen? Not a whole bunch of inshore guides target flounder, but y'all are around them a lot.
Yeah, and that used to be one of my favorite to fun fish for. And since the oil spill, that you have seen a big decline. And it used to be nothing. If you said you were going flounder fishing, you were going to go catch 10, 15, 20 flounder, come home with a bunch of them.
When's the last time you did that?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I think last year I caught eight.
All year.
Yeah.
Even though you're not targeting them, you're still going to catch
but
them.
But you're in their neighborhood when you're trout fishing.
Oh, absolutely. And even fun fishing, when we go out recreational fishing just ourselves, not on charters, I like flounder fishing. And we would have tournaments where flounder was a division, and they are not easy to come by like they used to be.
No, they're not. So definitely not. So there is an issue with flounder.
I think so.
There's not an issue, as far as I'm concerned, with speckled trout. I think there's people catching plenty of speckled trout.
I don't know. Let's talk about this because people are tasking you with going out as a captain here and finding them speckled trout to catch.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, different times of year is a little different now.
Yeah.
Like right now it might be a little more difficult than it is 2 months from now, or a month from now.
That's exactly right. This year we had what we call the fall and winter months, November, December, January, coming into February. That really never happened for us.
Fishing never happened.
Because of all the high muddy water, it just never really happened. But the upside to that is we're expecting we'll have a good spring, because those fish didn't get picked on, so to speak, all fall and winter up in the Delta. So we're hoping that's going to make for a great spring fishing.
All right. Well, I want to talk about that spring fishing with you. Also, while you're in here with us, I want to talk about tournament coming up this next weekend.
Yeah, it's the We've Got Your Six fishing tournament and benefit for the family of Sean Tudor, who was killed in the line of duty a few months ago. Being in the fishing community, we wanted to try to do something to help his widow, and we decided we'd put together a fishing tournament and a benefit. So we've got six.
Oh, y'all, he's going to lay it out for you. It's a party that happens to have a fishing tournament attached to it.
We hope so.
We had a party and a fishing tournament sprung out of it.
Yeah, well, there will be live music. There's going to be, we've got all-you-can-eat crawfish for $20.
Dancing with the fish instead of the stars.
That's right. Well, he's got all-you-can-eat crawfish for $20.
$20.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal.
We're going to have hot dogs, hamburgers, drinks. There's going to be two bands playing starting at noon on Saturday the 23rd, going to the weigh-in at 5. We've got six categories, sheephead, redfish, speckled trout, whiting, pompano, and Lord, I forgot.
Would flounder?
No, we didn't do flounder.
Probably for the reason nobody could be an empty category.
Yeah, it would be an empty category. No, but we put the whiting and the pompano and the white trout, hoping that we could encourage people that didn't have boats. Sure. That could come out and beach fish.
I tell you what, you get the get me excited about whiting. I don't care if you're on a boat or on the beach. I love some wintertime whiting fried. I mean,
That's the best thing for fish fry.
What we all call ground mullet, y'all. Great, great fish. I love it, love it, love it. Okay, so tournament is out of where?
It's going to be at the American Legion Post 250, which is on Dolphin Island Parkway. And it's going to be Saturday the 23rd. Tickets are available at West Marine, Shirley's, Tackle This, Shoot That, and online at Fishing Chaos.
Okay. And if people need to get their ticket before when? When's the...
I think it's Friday.
Okay.
Since we can
get... Go ahead and get it now.
Yeah, go ahead and get it now. But I think you could probably get it as late as Friday on the Fishing Chaos. You know, it's not a real formal tournament. It's all more about the benefit and raising money. So
yeah, this is, once again, the proceeds going to the Officer Sean Tudor Memorial Fund. Let's talk about it. By the way, was Pompano the other one?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so Pompano. Do you get – how many pompano do you catch a year as a charter captain?
Accidentally catch a few. Usually when we're out –
it's always an accident for me too. But.
Yeah, slip cork in the rigs for the speckled trout when they start showing up on the platforms. Every now and then, you know, you'll get a little pompano bite going, or if you're fishing out on the beaches for the trout.
I keep promising myself each year I'm going to – don't just speckled trout and snapper fish all the time, Sean, or blackfish. Go do something else and go get those pompano because they're so good to eat. And I say it each year and I don't end up doing it. But when I do catch one like you're talking about out there, I'm like, oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, dinner.
Grocery time.
That one's not going back.
Grocery time.
Yeah.
How do you make it? Mike mentioned it. How do you make it this time of year? I mean, this is a very tough time, and it's been a tough year, too, to be catching fish. But you're doing it. I watch your page. People can check you out online. I mean, you're catching fish right now.
Sometimes. Yeah, right now we're actually geared up for the sheephead run. You know, they always say, oh, when the azaleas start to bloom, that's when the sheephead
show blooming.
Up. They are blooming. And with the big winds we've had here lately, we hadn't been able to get out there and get a lot of them. But that's what we like to focus on for about the next 6 weeks, and then we'll transition over into the speckled trout and redfish.
Give folks some advice here. They're going to go out on their own doing this, sheephead.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of people all say, well, just go up to any structure and there's sheephead. You know, that's what the easy thing to say. Just go find some hard structure and there's sheephead on it. Get a little
not
more narrow.
Exactly.
Yeah, it kind of help people.
One of the things we like to do, and I learned this from the guy that I fish with, Chad Palmer, he gets right up on the rig and will actually fish vertically. Instead of trying to cast to the rig or using slip corks, he will fish almost straight up and down just using a split shot and a shrimp and a J-hook.
Okay.
And get as close to that structure as you can get. And they tend to hit it real. Sometimes they hit it mad, and there's no doubt about it. And sometimes you kind of you'll feel them pecking at it, and you kind of just give it a little tension. But I think that's the biggest thing is people get out there and fish close to the rig, but you probably want to be closer.
Right. Okay. So they're going to be relating to the structure of the rig, and they're going to come off a certain distance.
Yeah, but they're swimming around the rig legs. They're actually eating on the barnacles and things that are on the legs. Another little trick you can do is take something like a flat-edged hoe.
That's why I was just getting ready to ask you.
When you get up to the rig, you can scrape the rig leg, and it serves as kind of chum, gets them fired up. If you're having a slow bite, you can sometimes trigger them to get eaten that way.
And this is the time of year, while sheephead are usually, we think about them as finicky and slow bite and for most of the year. But if you're going to get slammed by a sheephead, it's this time of year they do it.
Absolutely.
They seem to be more aggressive.
That's they're out there spawning. They're aggressive. They're eating. And it's when the big ones show up. The smaller ones show up now. There's been some smaller fish out there. But probably in the next month or so, that's when the big sheephead will start showing up. It's not uncommon, you know, catch 7, 8, 9 pounders out there.
And that's one thing on a sporting side, let alone we'll get in the fact that they're a real pain to clean, but the meat is awesome.
And greatly overlooked. A lot of people don't realize how delicious they really are.
That's why you can keep one on my boat each. Because I want to eat them, but I just don't want to clean them. But they also, when they get, you're talking about those 7, 8, 9 pounders, those son of a guns are a fight.
Yeah, it's one of the best sporting fish that's out there. And they're greatly overlooked. They're in the last few years, there's always been the select group of people that knew how good they were, but it's people are figuring it out.
They burn drag. You start talking to people that ask sheephead, they're thinking about small ones in the summertime. These sheephead, right? You're burning drag out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you're right up there on the rig, so you better horse them and turn them around, or they're going to get you around that rig leg pretty good.
That's why I was going to ask you, how do you get them out away from the rig?
We're using 20-pound fluorocarbon leader, and that's another thing. You want to use the fluorocarbon. It can help with them when they're on that tricky bite, but you just grab a hold of the spool, put the heat on them, and hope you turn them.
Like a blackfish.
Yeah. Or, in the offshore, like a grouper.
That's right. The
first 10 seconds is the most important part. Once you got him turned, you typically have him.
Make sure you put that reel in winch mode.
That's right.
Start pointing out. Can you hang on a second? We're going to come right back, talking more with Captain Eric Nelson. And first of all, a tournament coming up this coming weekend to benefit the family of slain Mobile Police Officer Sean Tudor. Also, we'll talk some more inshore fishing. I'll get him to switch from – sheephead to redfish because I think he fancies a redfish a little bit.
A little bit.
A little bit. All right. Coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here on this Saturday, opening weekend of turkey season. But for that reason, we're doing a lot of fishing talk.
Well, me and you are not here right
That's
now.
Right. Right now, you and I are. Hopefully, we've already killed our bird. Pitched off the limb, came right to us, strutted, folded out, and got shot.
And then I'm going bass fishing just as soon as that happens.
I'm coming over to your place.
Yeah.
And we're talking from our past what we're going to do today. Also, our guest in studio, Captain Eric Nelson, Fanatics Charters.
Yes.
And people want to get more information about what you do, where do they go?
Fanaticscharters.com. Got to check us out on Facebook.
And I mentioned when we went into the break. I know where to go with this conversation because we're talking about different fish in the fishery, and obviously you spend a lot of time chasing speckled trout. You're talking about sheephead charters right now, but you are a redfish fanatic.
I do like catching redfish.
That is an understatement,
well,
y'all.
Done?
let me talk about this because you know I say it so many times on the show that I think, at least for me personally, the golden days of redfishing are now.
Yes, absolutely.
It's, I mean, as a kid, we just didn't have. We still caught some redfish, but not like we do now. And not from, you know, on a given day, you can be catching them south of Dolphin Island. I'm talking about slot reds, not even bull reds. You can catch slots on, you know, on the beach of Dolphin Island, and then you can be way up the river system in the Delta and catching them.
Absolutely. And out in the marsh, out towards the west. You know,
I don't want to jinx anything here, but they've gotten to be consistent.
Yes.
I mean, and that's got to be a good, I mean, it's not Louisiana consistent, but it's way more consistent than it was.
Yeah,
growing up for me.
Yeah, well, really than just 10 years ago. Probably the last 5 years has been the best being able to go out and catch slot redfish that we've had.
What do you tell somebody who thinks, you know what, maybe I want to go chase some of these? Is it we just mentioned a lot of places. I mean, beachfront.
Yes.
Marsh.
Yep.
You know, rigs. Delta marsh, rigs. You know, people get this idea that redfish are a shallow water species because that's what makes it on TV. That's the fun thing to watch on TV, shallow water. And they go, well, we don't have a lot of those kind of flats or shallow. But we do have shallow oyster bars. We have shallow banks.
Yeah, and they're going to relate to structure, you know, almost like bass. And by structure, it can be anything from a rig leg to oyster bars to shoreline, for that matter.
Or drain and ditch.
Drain and ditch, absolutely. Yeah. Anywhere that they can set up an ambush, that bait as it's falling out of that ditch, you know, that's there. You can catch them more places than you can catch the trout because they're more tolerant to fresh water.
And
shallow water, deep water.
Hot, cold. It's like sometimes they don't care.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, the trout are maybe the – I'm going to get myself in trouble here, so y'all get ready. The trout are like women, and the redfish are like men. You know, the trout are – they're going to have something that suits them and go to where it's right. And the redfish are like, huh, food.
Yeah, well, that's right. I would call trout schizophrenic just to keep from getting in trouble. But,
right.
Yeah.
Right, and redfish
just swim and eat and make little redfish.
Right, me eat more, go eat food. And now that we have more of them to catch like that, it's great. What about this? It's such a good artificial fisherman too. What do you throw? Like, because we can go, you know, we can go on the live bait and cut bait. That's one angle. But artificial wise, what are you throwing for redfish?
Usually a matrix shad, which is a, you know, just a little swim bait. Or I've started using their crawfish around here.
Really?
Yeah, did a lot of that in Louisiana and never really thought about it around here and have started playing with it a little bit, and they seem to be pretty receptive to it. Now, at the end of the day, I think they all think it's either a crab or a shrimp,
right?
No matter what.
Right.
But
me eat.
Yeah, me eat. Yeah. But just, you know, just hopping them on the bottom around those oyster beds. You can put them on the popping corks. We always call the popping cork ringing the dinner bell. You know, they'll hear that chugging of that cork, and they will seek it out.
And this time of year, with the water temperature, obviously, even though we've had a little cool weather now, water temperature's been warming up pretty steadily. The fish don't look at the same calendars we do.
No.
They're relating on temperature. Where do you put us in a normal year? I mean, are we more like April now or more like February? What would you – you know, it's – I mean, we got water temperatures get – to a certain point that the fish don't care.
Yeah, are they
in a spring pattern?
They're getting there.
Okay.
I think that has just started, where they're leaving the rivers and starting to head down into the shallower bays, starting to work
their way down. So it's worth checking that shallower
stuff. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, the trick right now is finding the clean water.
Yeah.
You know, and not so much with redfish, because they're not
right.
Yeah,
they'll
live in the muddy. They don't care. With the trout, you know, there's some pockets of clean water out towards the west, out towards Grand Bay and Portersville Bay and places like that. But it seems like the fish have started to move out of the rivers and are setting up on the flats at the mouth of the rivers, and probably in the next month and a half, if we don't have one of those freakish late-time cold snaps.
Right.
I think
so. We're at the beginning, unless something weird happens, we're at the beginning of spring fishing.
Yes. Yeah, I would say so.
So move out of winter thought pattern, start thinking spring.
Yeah, get away from deep water and fishing real slow when you start going to popping corks and fishing the shallow. Flats. And by shallow, you know, you're talking 3 feet of water, where in the fall and the winter patterns in the Mobile River, you're 18, 20 feet deep.
Yeah.
Dog River, Fowl River, you're 6 to 8 feet deep. Now you're starting to look, you know, you can start transitioning into that three to seven.
Which is, I got to tell you, I mean, catching any fish is fun. But catch them shallow, you know, popping corks and
there's something about watching a cork go down that it's like being
I'm
a
raising
kid.
My hand. I'm 46, but I'm perpetually that 7-year-old boy.
Yeah, there's something about hearing that cork get slurped.
Yep.
And topwaters are starting to work real well. In fact, we were fishing this weekend. The first biggest fish we caught of the day was on a topwater bait, and he came up and just inhaled it. And
that's good to know,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the topwater bite's hard to beat on trout and redfish as well. A lot of people don't realize that a redfish will come up and crush a topwater if you get it in front of him.
Watch them try to turn their mouth sideways.
Yeah, you'll see them torpedo up behind it and mm-hmm. know what's coming.
All right, remind folks about the tournament coming up. How do they get registered and fish?
Yeah, you can go to fishingchaos.com, or tickets are available at West Marine, Shirley's Bait and Tackle, Tackle This, Shoot That as well. Kids 12 and under are free. And to go with the tournament, we also have a benefit where we're going to have the all-you-can-eat crawfish, we're going to have burgers, hot dogs, drinks, live music, and we're going to have raffles available, where we've got some artwork from local artists, fishing gear, cooler sunglasses, gift cards, etc. And then we're going to have a secondary auction, which is for a Traeger 34 Pro Series grill.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a $1,700 package.
Yeah, wow.
That was provided by one of Traeger's pro staff members.
Awesome.
Who's in the military and wanted to support
awesome.
This
wow.
cause. So we're hoping to raise a lot of money for that. You do not have to be a participant in the tournament to come and enjoy the benefit itself, participate in the auction, and enjoy the food and festivities. We're going to have some kid-friendly things going on. So it ought to be a good time. But you do not have to fish to come down to the American Legion Post and enjoy the benefit.
All right. People want more information about coming fishing with you. How do they do that?
FanaticsCharters.com, or you can call 265-FISH.
All right. Great stuff. Thanks.
Thank you, Sean. We're out of here.
Prep Sports Report on the way next. And
hope turkey's got them.
Hope we have some stories, some limb hangers by next weekend.
We will.
We'll talk to you all then.